Hey, good morning. Welcome to Open Door. It's great to be with everybody today. And we've got a fantastic program. We're excited to have Brian Martin with us today to talk about all that's happening in the world of pharmacy. And there's a lot happening in the world of pharmacy right now, as many of you are aware. And as we get started this morning, I want to start with a little bit of a story. And so first of all, thank you all so much for all that you all are doing to really continue to provide great care for our patients. You all have been working tirelessly through the pandemic and beyond in some tough circumstances really to deliver care. And I realize it's not easy. And at the same time too, really appreciate all the work that all of you are doing around positively identifying a patient, washing your hands before delivering care, and really thinking about everything we do to try to reduce the risk of harm to our patients and our hospitals. So I thought I'd start today with just a little story, and I brought a little prop with me. And so this is, for some of you know this, this is the working end of a Foley catheter. And this little tiny rubber tube can really have a big impact on a patient. And so when I was practicing right out of the military, I had some new patients come see me. It was a husband and wife. They were just in there about 67 years old, in their late 60s, just retired. I just bought a little motorhome and had two kids, and they were planning to travel the country some and see the kids, and they had a couple grandkids they were looking forward to exploring. And over the course of a couple years, developed a really nice professional physician relationship with this couple and really enjoyed seeing them. And the woman in the relationship was fairly healthy. She took a little bit of thyroid medication, really not much else. And she really took care of herself. And one of the things that she loved doing was going swimming every day. And so one day she went swimming, got out of the pool, she tripped, fell, and unfortunately fractured her hip. And as many of you know, that if you're a female over the age of 65 and you have a hip fracture, there's a high risk of really difficult outcomes. Because of her health, because of how fit she was, I was really hopeful she was going to have a great outcome. Went to the hospital by ambulance, ultimately had the hip fixed. And in the process of that, probably appropriately, had a Foley catheter inserted. A couple of days after she was discharged, I got a call that she was starting to develop some urinary symptoms. And so we put her on an appropriate antibiotic. That, and it was a pretty mild antibiotic. And a few days later, she called up to say, hey, my urine is great, but I'm starting to have some diarrhea. And so became a little concerned about C. diff, saw her in the clinic that day. She looked great, her vitals were fine, talked to a gastroenterologist, who agreed to start her on outpatient antibiotics, and we saw her back the next day. She was not getting much better. She still had normal vitals, but was still having much more diarrhea. So we decided to admit her to the hospital, and we did. She stayed on the medical surgical unit in the hospital for about 3 or 4 days. The diarrhea continued to get worse despite significant efforts and increasing antibiotics. She was ultimately transferred to the intensive care unit and ultimately, unfortunately, went into shock and passed away. And it just really goes to show you just how sometimes our little interventions can sometimes make a big impact. And so you all have really done a really remarkable job of providing great care for our patients, really doing a good job of really helping reduce caudies, CLABSIs, and other hospital-acquired infections. We are starting to see a little bit of an uptick in caudies, and so just wanted to just give everybody a chance to remind themselves about the importance of really asking the question, do we absolutely really have to have the Foley catheter? And I really recognize that these are extreme times, and sometimes the answer just has to be yes. But if there's ever an opportunity to ask yourself the question and make it no, do that and give that patient that opportunity to miss having the Foley and potentially an adverse outcome. So thank you again for all that you're doing and really appreciate you really making that effort. All right, with that, let's bring Caroline to talk about today's show. Caroline, how are you doing?
I am doing well. That's quite a story. I was having kind of flashbacks to when my mom broke her hip as you were talking about it. You hadn't told me that story before, but good day. Happy to have Brian with us today. Absolutely. And we also want to remind people that you can put questions in the chat for Brian or Andy. Use your first and last names. Use your pronouns. That way we know who's asking the question. We've got some questions that have been emailed in advance. We did get a couple come in right before the program that we're trying to see if we can find some answers for. But a reminder, don't email the Ask Andy email during the program. Write your questions in the chat because otherwise I'm not going to see them. Other than that, I think we've got a lot to talk about with pharmacy, Andy. So I'm going to turn it back over to you so you can chat with Brian.
Yeah, outstanding. Well, let's bring Brian in. So Brian, thank you so much for being with us today. We're excited to have you on Open Door.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think many of you know Brian oversees our pharmacy efforts here, our pharmacy enterprise at MaineHealth, and has done a remarkable job leading our pharmacy efforts. And pharmacy has grown quite a bit over the last few years, so we're going to talk a little bit about that. But before we do that, Brian, tell us a little bit about how you got interested in healthcare and even more specifically in pharmacy.
Well, it all kind of starts with baseball, Andy. I really wanted to be a professional baseball player, and like many aspiring athletes, realized that that dream probably wasn't a reality. But baseball connected me to a friend who I played with in the summer who went into pharmacy school. And I started to learn more about, you know, what the program involved, looked at the curriculum, and then ultimately just took the leap to say, let's give it a whirl. So that's kind of how it, you know, sort of started, and the journey has been fun from there.
Well, it may be baseball's loss, but it is certainly our gain. We appreciate all that you have done to help our pharmacy enterprise for sure. So what has been one of the most rewarding things about a career as a pharmacist or as a pharmacy leader?
Yeah, I think ultimately what drives me every day, and I know it drives our pharmacy care team members, is taking care of people, you know, delivering care, being empathetic, having an opportunity to really be purpose-led. Our vision is astounding to be a part of. And so for me personally, professionally, you know, every day knowing that no matter, you know, what challenge comes to us in a given day, that we're caring for people and we're helping our community. So that's quite motivating for me.
Yeah, it really is. It's a big responsibility. And can be very rewarding when we see the impact that we can make positively on behalf of our patients. In a lot of ways, you describe just living our value of being patient-centered.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is great. So one of the things that we've seen here recently is the expansion of community pharmacy presence within MaineHealth. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. And so so honored to have the opportunity to share about our opportunities that we have been really evolving over a number of years in the community pharmacy space. Many people who think of hospital pharmacy teams think of what we do in our hospitals, which we do amazing work every day. And we have amazing people doing that work. One of the areas that we knew that we needed to be more present in the healthcare continuum was our community space. So many of you may not know, we actually have four licensed retail pharmacies. I don't know if we could queue up a slide right now where I could present our website there on the screen, where you can go now. You could simply Google MaineHealth Pharmacy Services and you'll likely come across this site. This provides information, basic information, to demonstrate where we have these services. And as you can see on this website, we're proud to have for four services, one being a pharmacy at Maine Medical Center on the Bramhall campus. One thing that I think should be noted there is that is the only 24/7 community pharmacy in the entire state of Maine. So I think it provides an incredible benefit in access and convenience to our community. We have a pharmacy in Biddeford at the Southern Maine Healthcare campus, as well as one in Rockport at the pharmacy at Penn Bay. One other pharmacy that is our newest one that I want to highlight is a sort of special pharmacy. It's a pharmacy that focuses on specialty medications as well as medications that we can deliver to people's homes. So in addition, on that website, there's a box you can click on. If you would like us to provide services for your prescription needs, you can transfer your prescriptions to any one of those pharmacies. And then if you want to get them mailed to you for free, for many of the medicines, we can do that. So check out the site, check out our services, and we'd love to provide care for everyone.
Yeah, you know, and in the Mueller household, we've done that, and it really is a remarkable service. And so it's something that everyone should really consider thinking about doing. It's, you know, you had the opportunity to tour the facility that's been built, and I think there are a number of things that are remarkable about it. It's not a brand new building. It's a repurposed building, but you all have done a wonderful job of making do with not a lot to try to make that work, and the enthusiasm that your team has had for really pulling that off is really spectacular. One of my favorite aspects of it is how you've designated all the conference rooms. You want to tell people about the conference rooms in that mail order facility?
Yeah, I would love to, and thanks for noticing that when you were over at our space. our values are incredibly important to us. They are to me personally, they are to our care team members and to what we do. So we chose to name each one of our conference rooms over, you know, one of our values. So just to another way to remind ourselves of why we're here, how we do what we do.
Yeah, I think it's an awesome way to kind of put our values into action and live them on a regular basis. So thank you for that. Now, in addition to a lot of the exciting news about the growth in our pharmacy services and the capabilities that we have, there's also been some tough news about pharmacy lately that I know has been keeping you up at all hours of the day and night and your team, as well as some of our physicians, nurses, case managers, and navigators as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the pharmacy shortages that we've been dealing with?
Yeah, unfortunately, we, for well over a decade, have been heading off drug shortage challenges in our country. It's not a U.S. thing; it's a global thing. But we feel it hard in the U.S. Most recently, we've been really challenged with a few cancer drugs that haven't just been plentiful. However, we've been able to maintain enough supply to treat our patients, and we're continuing to work hard. That tests all of our values, the amount of innovation that goes into that, the amount of ownership. But one thing that stands out, Andy, is it's clearly that we're better off together than as one. So when these challenges happen, we have all of our local health systems working together to move supply around, to look at who needs what. It just reminds me every day how much stronger we are together.
Yeah, no, Brian, I really appreciate that. It really is about being one team working together so our communities are the healthiest in America. And it really gives us the opportunity to try to maximize the impact to our patients around that care delivery and do the right things so people aren't as impacted as they might be otherwise if we're all trying to fight for the same scarce resources. And, you know, it's interesting, Brian, because I was recently talking to one of our medical students. And she talked about some of the challenges, you know, some of the things that surprised her as a second year medical student in one of our rural community settings. And I asked her, well, what are some of those? She said some of the limited availability of resources. And I thought to myself, well, maybe she's talking about advanced imaging or super specialized care on site. And so I asked her to specify, and she said amoxicillin. And this is back when amoxicillin was short. So, you know, it just shows you, you know, the day and age we're living in where things like, I would have never dreamed in a million years we would ever have a time in, you know, a day where amoxicillin was running short. Yeah. But we've lived through that. We're living through some of these others as well. But we're grateful for your team and doing everything we can. Speaking of students, is there an opportunity to talk a little bit about some of the work that you all do in education as our pharmacy enterprise?
Yeah, would love to. Along the theme of being a learning organization, we take our responsibility in that area very seriously. And we've had the opportunity to mentor and coach, you know, hundreds and hundreds of students over the years in pharmacy, which we really enjoy that opportunity. It just makes us better. They're very inquisitive. We also, many people may not know, we have pharmacy residents in our organization, and we have 8 residents right now ready to graduate, but we will have a whole new class come in. We're looking to expand that residency program across MaineHealth and make sure that we're giving residents experiences beyond just a large academic medical center experience at MaineMed, but really in other local health systems where we have opportunity to provide rural care in a different setting that they may in an academic environment. So we really are striving to expand our vision in the learning space. And overall, it's something that makes us better for our patients.
Yeah, I really think it does. I think you connected on a couple of key points. I love the way you connect that to back to our strategic priority of becoming a learning healthcare organization. That is so fundamental to who we need to be successful in the future. And it's so clear that education of all types is going to have to play a meaningful role in that, which is why education will continue to be a huge priority for us as a healthcare system. And at the same time, too, really reflecting on that fact that it brings a lot of curiosity into the system, helps makes us better. And we're not going to have an additional value, but if we had to pick one more, curiosity might be it. I think that's really something important we have, and learners certainly bring a ton of that, which, to your point, keeps us all sharp and thinking about the future, which is great. One of the other areas where pharmacy plays a big role is really in interprofessional models of care delivery. Do you want to talk a little bit about the role that pharmacy plays in those care models?
Yeah, and I think for me personally, I may not even be here. You asked me why I got into pharmacy, but if you were asking me why I stayed in pharmacy, it was around the interprofessional care opportunities. And in my last few years of pharmacy school, I saw an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association by Dr. Lucian Leap, who demonstrated as lead author that pharmacists on rounds in an intensive care unit at Mass General Hospital made a significant difference in the outcomes of patients. And that gave me sort of that spark to continue in pharmacy and say, this is a place I really could practice. And then went on to complete a residency program and ultimately work in critical care for 6 years. But in that experience and that journey, what I've learned is how much better we are when we diversify perspectives, experience, knowledge into the care of patients. And you know, I believe that pharmacists, pharmacy technicians who are completing medication histories on a daily basis throughout our system, and all pharmacy care team members have a vital role in how we produce outcomes for our patients. And so I love the scorecard measure of interprofessional care. And we've really seen that be something that allows us a platform really to get more involved in that sort of way. So it's awesome.
Ah, that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. And really, in a lot of ways, it really is professional diversity aligned with our other efforts around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and really helping create a better picture around the patient to help them get ultimately the best care. So another great time, Brian. You're doing that very well today. So thank you for sharing some of that information about what you, your teams are doing. I know your teams are working super hard. You've got a great team. You've got a great leadership team. I really enjoy seeing our pharmacists, clinical pharmacists, when around. They make such a big impact in the lives of our patients. So thank you for you and all that your team are doing. So Caroline, is it time to maybe think about some questions?
I think it is. We already have a couple questions and a comment in the chat.
Good.
So I'll start with the comment, because every once in a while our guests get fan mail. And Brian has some fan mail. I think many of you know our pharmacists were super involved in our COVID-19 vaccine clinic, especially when we were setting up those mass vaccine clinics. Amanda said, no questions. I just wanted to say I worked with Brian in the vaccine clinics, and he had to make many difficult decisions, and he was a rock star.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Fan mail for you. But now I have a question for you, actually two questions for you, from Ruben. Ruben wants to know first, Brian, if hiring and retaining pharmacy techs and or pharmacists is a challenge these days?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ruben. Thank you for asking that. You know, I think it's been talked about on this show how workforce is a significant challenge in healthcare. We definitely see that as a significant issue within our, you know, hiring mostly around our pharmacy technician care team members. But we're not immune in sort of the pharmacist space as well, depending on where the location is and what type of pharmacist we're recruiting for. We're actually kicking off across our pharmacy leadership a task force to focus on first pharmacy technician workforce and what we can do better there to be an employer of choice, to be somewhere where people want to stay and grow in their career. So that's a great question, and the answer there is yes.
Yeah.
And then a follow-up question from Ruben also was if there were opportunities for high school students with an interest in pharmacy career to come meet our people.
Absolutely, and folks can reach directly out to me. I've been able to connect with lots of high school students over the years and set up shadows with our care team members in different areas. They're certainly welcome to connect with their local health system pharmacy leader or care team members. It's probably one of the most valuable things I ever get to do is just talk to people who are interested in different careers and help them learn more about pharmacy.
Reminder to people putting questions in the chat, please give us your first and last name because we don't take anonymous questions. I'm going to read a couple email questions that have come in since the last program. This one's for Andy. Amanda said, I was wondering if MaineHealth ever looks at comparable teams and how people are prompted to make sure that there is not any bias against minorities or genders.
Oh boy, great question. And it goes right back to the diversity, equity, inclusion that we discussed just a couple minutes ago. And so, as you've heard me say before many times, we have to continue to push ourselves to be more inclusive as an organization, welcoming any and everyone into roles, and at the same time, continue our own efforts around diversifying as well, becoming a place where everyone can feel welcome. And we're going to need to do that because we're not going to simply find enough workforce within the states of Maine and New Hampshire to meet our needs. And the rest of the country is becoming more diverse. And so it's really an imperative for us to continue to invest in that. So one of the ways we're beginning to start to create awareness of our own unconscious biases, which we all have, is really focusing on right now cohorts of our leaders participating in some efforts around opening minds and hearts to diversity, equity, and inclusion through our diversity, equity, and inclusion teams. So Ryan Pauley is leading those cohorts of our leaders. Brian, I think you were in one of those yesterday, correct? Yeah, okay. So I had a chance to connect with that team and just talk about how important it is to me and how the impact it's had on me personally, both in, as a leader, as a clinician, as a husband, a father, and just a person. And so, and how important I think it is to our, ultimately to our organization, our patients, our outcomes, and really making sure that we're being thoughtful about challenging ourselves about who we're considering for roles is really, really important. So one of the things that I've been doing is really pushing hard for those who are helping us recruit candidates around making sure that we're including diverse candidates, that we're really trying to seek new sources and identify ways to think about hiring candidates. We had a great question last time from Madison around, are there opportunities to specifically recruit individuals who feel because of their sexual orientation or gender identity are no longer welcome in certain parts of the country? And could we welcome them here? And as I mentioned before, our diversity, equity, inclusion and HR teams are working to think about how we can do that effectively. So yeah, for sure, we're going to have to continue to push ourselves to make sure that we're trying to do everything we can to eliminate conscious and unconscious bias from our hiring and promotion practices at MaineHealth.
James has a question for Brian. James says, do our retail pharmacies offer medications for our furry kids? I'm assuming he means pets here, but would you be able to answer that?
That's a great question. I'm not aware that we do. So I'll start with that, but I'll clearly look into that with our pharmacy leaders across those four sites to see if we are doing anything in that space. But at this point in time, I don't believe we offer veterinary pharmacy services.
All right, next questions we have a couple of financial questions that have come up recently, Andy, which is not surprising given all the conversations we've been having about our finances. Robin asked directly if there were any plans for layoffs due to financial constraints that the system is currently under.
We don't have plans for any mass layoffs and really want to try to avoid doing that for lots and lots of reasons. It's certainly damaging to culture long term. It's a blunt way of managing tough problems. And for us, the reality is we need to be here to care for our communities. We need to be here at every location, every local health system providing that care. And, you know, it's been a struggle for some of the other health systems in the state to continue their full complement of services, and we're bearing the brunt of some of that. And so if we were to significantly reduce the size of our workforce, then, it would have a real big impact, profound impact on the health of our communities. So we're doing everything we can to avoid that. Now, if catastrophe struck financially, and I don't anticipate that it will, we're making steady progress and improving this year over last year, although we're still losing money at the moment, then we might have to reconsider something in a drastic situation. But right now, that's not anticipated, and we're not having any conversations about mass layoffs or anything like that at the moment.
Related, Margaret had a couple of questions related to this. She wanted to know, she said she was told by her executive director there was a hiring freeze for clinical positions.
No. There is no hiring freeze. We want to hire all the people that we need to into the roles that we need, and we really want to have a permanent workforce. We appreciate those who are traveling through our system and spending some time here on a temporary basis, but ideally we want everybody to be here full time. We really want, a care team of owners, not a care team of renters. And so we want people who are invested, as Brian described, in our values, really committed to our vision, and really committed to the communities we live in and serve. And so we are continuing to hire, and we'll continue to do that. And that's certainly true for the clinical side. And in fact, we are directing most of our recruitment resources to the clinical side to ensure that we can make sure that you all have the supports you need to provide adequate care for our patients and our community. We're meeting that need now through the help of travel labor, but if we can continue to hire our own, that's better longer term. The second thing on the non-clinical side, certainly we want to scrutinize positions carefully to make sure that we absolutely positively need them. And we're not prioritizing those over our clinical team. We really need to make sure that we're focused on our clinical team first. But no, there is no hiring freeze at the moment. We don't have any immediate plans for a hiring freeze. And again, if circumstances became catastrophic, then we may have to reconsider some of that. But for sure, at the moment, we are continuing to hire.
Okay, so No hiring freeze.
Please bring people to us.
We want job applicants. Please.
Absolutely.
Okay. I know you were very thorough with that. I just want to reiterate. And another thing from Margaret was she thought that maybe she shouldn't be doing Moments to Shine right now. Can you clear that up as well?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm assuming she's asking the question because of the concern about expensive Moments
correct,
to Shine.
Correct.
Yeah. So a couple things. So if you give someone a note or sort of a card through Moment to Shine, it really doesn't cost anything. It's negligible. And so you can feel free to do that all you want. If you want to give a gift through Moments to Shine that has a monetary value associated with it, you do have to get permission from your supervisor to do that. And even if you do that, in the overall scheme of things, it's a relatively small amount of dollars. And so appreciation, how we show appreciation for each other, is so vitally important. It's really got to be one of our core competencies as a care team. And so Moment to Shine offers you a structured, simple way to do that. And if that's effective for you, you should use it, even in this environment, because appreciation has a return on investment. I don't know exactly how to measure that. And as smart as Al is, Al Swallow, our CFO, I'm not sure Al Swallow completely knows how to measure that, but there is a return on that. So don't stop using Moment to Shine if that's something, a way that you like to show appreciation. And there are other ways to show appreciation too, but it's certainly a fine way to show appreciation to a care team member.
All right, so Brian, more fan mail for you. Brenda says, I can vouch for Brian's commitment to connecting Maine Health to the future generation as he is speaking with my son, who is in the PharmD program. Very grateful for your mentorship, Brian. Megan wrote in about the pet prescription question. She said she was actually involved in the go live for pet prescriptions at the SMHC retail and PBMC retail location. So we can get more information about that, but it sounds like that we may actually have pet prescriptions. Tammy also had a message for pharmacists. Tammy says, as a former bedside RN and also care manager at Maine Medical Center, I have personally witnessed the important impact from pharmacists participating in team rounding. They are such an important part of the care team to help ensure safe medications for our patients while in the hospital and also discharge planning. We appreciate our pharmacists. So want to show some of that love for you, Brian, and the other pharmacists. Question now from Karen. As you can see, the chat's been very active here. Karen wanted to know if Andy has an update on care team members and their family members who are covered by Maine Health Insurance being able to find a primary care provider within Maine Health. Another health care organization in the community is not accepting new patients, but is allowing care team members to become new patients. Is Maine Health planning something along those lines?
Yes. So I'm going to share a little bit with you, which is we're continuing to do a lot of work. So Aileen Mickey, the president of our medical group, Brett Lafredo, our senior primary care physician, and others are doing a ton of work on really trying to continue to take some of the burden off of our primary care physicians, their APPs, the care teams, to create some additional capacity. Lizzie Mulcahy and Gina Quinn Skillings, who you had the opportunity to meet in our digital care team, have really created some virtual primary care pods that gives people the opportunity to access virtual care that otherwise might have taken up primary care time that can also then be used to create capacity within our primary care clinics. We're also recognized we're going to have to expand primary care, and so Aileen and the team are working on some ways to continue to grow and expand primary care. And in addition to all of that work, which has to continue in earnest, we may have something else for our care team that we're planning that's a little bit early yet to talk about. So just stay tuned to that. I'm going to tease you a little bit for a little bit longer, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that at some point.
Sounds good.
I have to say, given the number of times we've had that question asked, for sure we hear you. We know this is a massive issue for you as a care team. You need to have good primary care. And we have amazing primary care physicians and APPs who are working super hard and busy at the moment. So we recognize we're going to have to come up with some solutions for this, and that's something we are working on.
All right. Thanks, Andy. We got this question in the inbox just before the program and actually reached out with a little phone a friend. So I'm going to cut the question down a little bit because it's on the longer side and just give a little bit update. But Lucinda wanted to know more about what was involved with the new system of servicing our printers and copiers with a new company, Marco. She said her team had been having an issue where they were told, the Marco company were saying that they were only going to be servicing networked printers, which were previously serviced by another company, and then they put in a ticket with IT, and it sort of was going round and round in circles. So we reached out to IT, and IT let us know that they are aware of this issue, they are working on a solution, and hope to have some information for people soon on that. So stay tuned. Hopefully that made sense as I was kind of cutting down in process here on the question. But Lucinda, IT is working on the issue, and they are aware of your issue. So I wanted to throw that one out there. We got a couple of questions about the Maine Medical Center parking garage, speaking of things that kind of come up frequently.
Yeah, for sure.
And one of them was from Leslie. Leslie wanted to know if there was any discussion around lowering the years of service required for the lower level parking in the Maine Medical Center parking garage. For those of you who don't park at Maine Medical Center, there are several floors. The very, very bottom floor is reserved for those with 30 years of service. Leslie said it is often mostly empty, and she wanted to know if anyone in the parking office looked at how many spots are available versus how many employees might qualify if that years of service number was lower.
Yeah, so thank you for everybody who served 30 years or more. We're grateful for every single day during that period of time. So yeah, so we reached out to the Maine Medical Center team about this and found that they are considering some opportunities to potentially lower the years of service or think about some other considerations to make sure we're maximizing that front, that bottom level.
And then another question that we've gotten quite a few times about the garage. There is a crosswalk going to the garage and there is a traffic light there. That traffic light has not been activated. Robin wanted to know if anything was being done about this because there's a lot of traffic coming through there. People can feel like it's unsafe crossing the street.
Yeah, it seems like all we should do is just reach up there and grab the plastic off and turn that thing on, right? Yeah, it's a little more complicated than that. So ultimately, that's controlled by local and state officials. And so when we put the plan in place for the parking garage, even long before I got here, we had to be able to demonstrate a certain traffic volume in order to activate both the traffic light and the pedestrian crosswalk. And unfortunately, that was all done prior to COVID, and then COVID effectively diminished the traffic flow and prevented us from reaching the threshold that was required to actually activate it. And now that we're sort of in this post-COVID environment, not as many people are coming to downtown Portland every day to work, and so it's further sort of compounded the problem. We haven't met the thresholds yet. So we petitioned the state to see what we can do to lower the thresholds. And there may be some hope on the pedestrian crosswalk, which is a start, but it still may be a while on the traffic light. And I'm sorry, it's sitting there dangling, looking tempting as a way to potentially help you get out of the parking garage when you're tired after a long shift. But for right now, we're sort of stuck.
All right, more fan mail for the pharmacy team. Brian, you're not getting a lot of questions, but you are getting a lot of compliments. So I just want to share. Ruben says, I have a lot of trust in the Maine Health Pharmacy. Trusting them with my pet's medication would be an easy decision. Kathleen says, just a big thank you. The MMC pharmacy staff and service are just wonderful. We as a family have used them for many years. And then we do have another question for Andy in the chat from Laura. Laura wanted to know if there was anything you could share on the Premier engagement.
Yeah, so it's sometimes helpful to have, you know, someone from the outside just give us a sense of how we're doing relative to peers and understanding what that looks like. And so that's why we've engaged Premier to look at our corporate services, to ask questions about what is best practice and other health systems that maybe we need to think about implementing. Or what are some things that maybe we could think about doing differently that might be more effective? And so those teams are kind of going through that process right now, working for each of most of our corporate areas. And we'll get some of those summary and findings back over the next few weeks. And so that's part of what that Premier engagement is all about.
Next, we want to go back to a question that we asked on the last program. And Jackie, who had asked this question, got back to the inbox and said, hey, Caroline, you didn't actually ask the question that I was asking. And I went, whoops, because sometimes when it's a long question, I try to make them shorter for the program. And I accidentally apparently changed the meaning of the question. So we want to make sure we ask the actual question, which she was talking about COVID-19 absences. And the question that we had asked was about whether PTO needed to be used for COVID-19 absences. But what she was actually asking was about the number of tardy or unscheduled leaves a person can have in the year. And if we are taking 5 days for COVID-19 absences and those absences are being counted against the amount of unscheduled leaves we're having throughout the year, this could become problematic. Are we looking at doing anything about that?
Yeah, we are. So we're trying to evaluate how this is going to continue to work as sort of we get more comfort with COVID over time. So more to come on that in the near future.
And then she also wanted to know if we might consider lessening that 5-day period for COVID.
Yeah, I think it's the same answer. I think we're trying to gain greater confidence. The CDC is updating and changing some of its recommendations, like the no masking anymore in our clinical areas. And so we'll continue to stay tuned to that guidance.
Okay. Let me see. Here's one more that we have in the email. Casey said that they recently became aware that Maine Behavioral Healthcare does not reimburse for a clinician's exam and or license fees, and was wondering the reasoning behind that. It felt disheartening to spend more than 50% of a paycheck on requirements that keep their employment valid when they're already living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. And so we reached out, and I think the Maine Behavioral Health team is trying to look at that and figure out if there's some opportunities to reconsider the way that's done.
All right, I think I'm just checking. I had a few pieces of paper here. Make sure that I have gotten through all the questions that we have, and I believe that I have.
Okay.
So usually at this point, we go straight to recognitions, and we do have recognitions. I know Brian's got a recognition. You've got a recognition. But before we do the recognitions, Andy, you've got an announcement about our next program, which is pretty exciting. We're really excited about it.
Yeah, we do. So it's going to be a little bit different, right, Caroline?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And you have to bear with us a little bit as we kind of change this up a little bit. We may not get it completely right every time, but I'm super excited to announce something that we've planned for next month's Open Door. And that is our next program is going to be on Wednesday, June 7th, and it's going to be on the road. So we're actually going to be holding the program in person at Franklin Memorial Hospital in Farmington. But also, all of you on Teams can still continue to participate. So it's going to be kind of a hybrid of both. So Barb Sergio, Franklin's recently appointed president, will be my guest, and we'll talk about a lot of the things that are happening there and what her leadership journey is like. And then we're going to look a little different because we're going to be doing this outside of the studio. We're going to be doing it live. And we're going to have the ability to try to take some questions in advance like we typically do. We're going to get some opportunity to have you chime in online. And we're also going to try to have some live questions from an audience that's going to be there. And so we're going to be welcoming some of our care team there into the room as we do this. And so that we can try to get more care team present on the 7th, we're going to actually start the program an hour later at 10 a.m. on that Wednesday. So mark your calendars for that time change. But it should be an exciting program. We're going to try to continue to take Open Door on the road a lot more frequently in the future. And boy, I'm super excited about that. All right. So now I think it's time for some recognition. And so, Brian, do you want to start with some?
Yeah, I would love to. And honored to share some recognition that we received recently with regards to our specialty pharmacy program and the care team members that just make so much good care happen. This is really in the spirit of being a learning organization where you have to measure what we do, and to achieve excellence, we need to know where our gaps are. And so we submit data on an annual basis to a national accredited organization that we belong to. And they let us know that for the second year in a row, our specialty program has been awarded with the Pioneer Award for performance improvement. What's so remarkable about this is they informed us that we're only one of 18 organizations out of almost 400 submitting organizations that achieved that. And we achieved it 2 years in a row. So that puts us at the top 4% of specialty pharmacy programs in the entire country. So thank you very much to those care team members.
That's just amazing. That's really living our value of excellence. It's just mind-blowing, Brian. So thank you to that specialty pharmacy care team for all that they do. Okay, this next recognition, this is going to be a tearjerker. So this goes to the acute and critical care units at Waldo County General Hospital. It's just a wonderful example of how a group of nurse leaders and the care team just really went above and beyond to create a completely unforgettable patient experience. So Rebecca and Duncan, first dated when Rebecca was 18 years old. She stated he was the love of her life, but their lives ultimately went in separate ways, with both having families with other people. 13 years ago, their paths crossed again, and they rekindled their love that they had all those years ago. More recently, Rebecca was admitted to Waldo County General Hospital and shortly afterwards was placed on hospice care due to her progressing cancer. When Duncan and Rebecca were told a cure was no longer an option, they decided to proclaim their love by getting married at the hospital. Excited to make their dream come true, the Waldo acute and critical care team sprang into action with just 3 days to prepare, coordinating the decorations, setting up the space, providing a beverage cart, welcoming guests, and taking beautiful photos, just a few of which you see here. When putting Rebecca back to bed after the wedding, she stated, "This was the best day of my life." There's a short video that was created that I'll share after the program. Be sure to have a tissue handy when you watch because it's really incredible. So thank you to the Waldo team for making a huge difference every day and living our patient-centered value in a very unique but incredibly meaningful way. All right, so the next open door will be Wednesday, June 7th at a special time at 10 a.m. In the meantime, thank you all for all that you're doing. Make sure you're positively identifying the patient in front of you and then washing your hands before you engage in care. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time.